not as close to the front as you dare. Okay. No, I'm just, I can introduce myself a little bit. Happy to do that. I don't think anybody really knows me super well here, so yeah.
So if it fills up,
yes,
just good to call people forward.
Yeah.
To leave space at the back.
Yeah.
Because then it's going to fill up even more.
If those of you who've already arrived could just come as far forward as you can, it just leaves space for the hundreds of people who are bound to arrive shortly. And if not, it'll be very intimate. This is very good for this topic. Okay, I think I'm just going to dive in. People will be arriving. The Dharma Parlor is on a tight schedule. Hello to those of you not at Butterfield. We're having lovely weather here. I'm going to introduce myself. There wasn't anybody here who knew me that well. I'm Padmadharani, and I'm from England, obviously, but I live in Spain, in quite a remote part of Spain. So my life for some years has been just a very simple life. At the moment I live by myself with my dog, and my life comprises of a lot of things that are just very non-conceptual, very simple: gardening, walking the dog, looking after the land and the house. So this is a life that lends itself really, really well to a deeper reflection, you could say, into the nature of reality. In a way, that's what this talk is about. It's about the Vimoksha Mukhas, the Dharma doorways, the doorways to liberation. So I wanted to start with just a bit of a poll. So how many of you, hands raised, really believe in the possibility of liberation, awakening, enlightenment, freedom from suffering? Okay, well, that's sort of looks like most of the room, maybe even all of the room. How many of you think that this is something that is coming to you sometime soon in this lifetime? Okay, good, you've got one, two. Very good. Maybe sometime not so soon in this lifetime, sometime like maybe towards the end of the lifetime if you're lucky. Okay. So this points to me a truth about practice and how we practice. So the way that for most of us practice is lived is it's lived in a context which is normal. It's lived in a context of, you know, the context in which reality is often experienced, of time and space. So we have this sense that there is a point A, which you could say is abject ignorance, and a point B. Point B is point Buddha, and we're on this continuum. And we tend to see ourselves somewhere along that continuum. That seems, just nod your heads, if that equates with. We have a sense, some of us who've been practicing for quite some time, we definitely have a sense that we've kind of moved along a little bit. We're a bit further away from point A and a bit further towards point B. We often have a sense of ourselves relative to others on the path and where they are. So what can you tell me about that picture of how we live, how many of us tend to approach and live the spiritual life? What's true about that model, you could say? Just shout out.
Challenging.
It's challenging. What else?
So that's a very linear view.
It's a linear view. And what does it being a linear view, what does that mean?
I think it's a bit limited thinking about that.
Yeah, so it's limited.
You'll have a sense that there's a long way to go and therefore it can't happen yet.
Yeah, long way to go and therefore it's not gonna happen now. It's not imminent, it's dependent on some progress that you still to make, that's still gonna happen. What else about that framework?
Huh?
It's sighted in time, yeah, and what else?
We can see a part of debris.
We can see a part of debris. Most definitely.
Projecting into the future and you're not in the present.
Yeah, there's a projection into the future which takes us out of kind of a sense of being in the present. What else about that framework? I'm kind of digging for something in particular.
Things are not right now. Something wrong with what's now.
There's something wrong with this moment. There's something wrong with this, with me, with what's happening now. And if you think in terms of space, what else does this model indicate about point A, point B, point ignorant, point Buddha? Yeah. Yeah, it's a process. So it's that sense of, you know, here I am, and where is liberation?
It's dualistic.
It's dualistic. So where is liberation inside of this framework? Where does it live?
Somewhere other than here.
Somewhere other than here. Somewhere else. So what would you say if I told you that freedom and liberation and what is pointed to in the Vimokshas, this teaching that I'm going to be talking about a little bit, is already and always present. It's never not present. It's always with us. It's in this space right now.
I'd say, where is it?
Very good question. So what I'm going to do to begin this is I'm going to take you on a little journey. This is kind of I call this a sort of meditative inquiry. And we're just going to do this for about 15, 20 minutes. It's not, there's nothing. So for those of you who are already like, oh God, get me out of here. Thought this was going to be a talk. In a way, I can talk to you about the Vimokshas. I can talk to you about, so they are technically the signless, the wishless, and shunyata, emptiness. So hands up, how many of you that means very much to at all? A few hands. So for many of you that will be fairly meaningless. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a little journey. We're going to journey to the ragged edge of what it is to stand on the edge of the reality that is habitual and that we experience, you know, we're probably all experiencing right now, that reality which gives you a tent, you all sitting out there, me sitting up there, this is a woman that sits up here, all of that sort of conceiving that gives us distinction, this world. We're going to travel a little bit in that to see if we can touch into what is a little bit more mysterious. So all I'm going to ask you to do is just sit where you are, sit, you know, if you need to be a little bit more comfortable. I'm going to start with a poem. We're going to be, broadly speaking, moving through three gateways. We're going to be touching into all three of the gateways to freedom. And this is based on, you know, if you can't find the truth where you are, well, where else do you expect to find it? So this is looking at, when we say that this truth is always and already present, what that means is right now in this moment you can access it. It's not, in a certain way, it's not dependent on any practices you do, on any developmental stuff you do, and paradoxically it is. So I'll get to paradox a little bit later on. So if it helps you just to close your eyes, I'll start with a poem. Partly where we're moving into is something that is non-conceptual. We're trying to move away from a conceptual framework. Reality isn't experienced in concepts, so we have to look for it in something a little bit more abstract. Poetry is a great way in. This is a Mary Oliver poem. It doesn't have to be the blue iris. It could be weeds in a vacant lot, or a few small stones. Just pay attention. Then patch a few words together and don't try to make them elaborate. This isn't a contest, but the doorway into thanks and a silence in which another voice may speak. So beginning by just coming into your body and your breath, so just to relax a little bit into your breath and find that still place in your breath, in your body. Just find that place. It's not separate from all the activity. There's always a sense of a resting place in the body. So just resting back into that. So you can notice as you connect with your breath that there's that sense of the breath moving in the body. So just feeling the breath. It's almost as if the breath is breathing the body. Now notice that there's also a sense of the breath breathing or moving the subtle body. There's something just outside of the body, just around the body, and you can feel that moving along with the body. There's a sense of kind of something around the body. So don't think about it, just try and go there in a more intuitive sense. Just intuit, feel your way towards that, feeling what's around the body. Now just take that out a little bit further and have a sense of awareness. Actually, awareness is everywhere. You can notice if you look for the limits of your awareness, it's very difficult to get to the limits of awareness. You'll notice that there's awareness that goes all the way out to the edge of the camp. You have a sense of all that's happening around us. So just give recognition to that field of awareness. Notice that awareness has a quality of openness, limitlessness. I'm not trying to create anything. This is not something that you can make happen. It's just noticing and looking and finding that quality. It's almost awareness aware of itself. It's awareness that includes everything. It's not needing to or wanting to exclude any of what's arising in it. So just let imagine your mind just becoming big. Often we have a sense of mind as being housed in our brain. Just let that feeling of awareness being everywhere. Or if it helps you, you could just ask the question, is there anywhere awareness isn't? You can also look for, there's a very still point in experience. It's not separate from activity, it's just, it's always a still point. Your body will naturally find it if you just relax. So everything's unfolding in this field of awareness. Awareness simply receives everything. So you can listen to my voice. Notice that my voice is arising out of that awareness. Notice where it's coming from. And notice it disappears into that awareness. Maybe just look for what's just right before your experiencing of my voice. What's there right after? It's a bit more subtle. So while our experiences are changing constantly, this is a great environment to notice. It's never still, it's chaotic. It's coming at you intensely, non-stop. But just notice that within awareness there is something unchanging in experience. And just relax into it, like as if you were relaxing into a nice hot bath. Just let yourself drop down into it. It can be helpful if you can just let go. Just let go of you doing anything. See if you can just have a sense of awareness just doing its thing. It actually doesn't need you to be aware. And then just drop your sense of awareness, drop down into your heart center. Helps, you can just put your heart on your hand just to help to connect. So now we're just relaxing just a little bit more. Just let go, you can almost like visualize and imagine a shift in the body. It's very subtle, but just a dropping down. Notice that there's a quality in awareness of sensitivity. You could almost say it's an absolute intimacy. If you just connect with my voice, for example, and if you just let go of any of the trying to understand or judge or resist, just let that intimately be experienced. So this is a sense of, it's like we're shedding, we're letting go, we're completely surrendering, dropping down. You can feel this, really use your kind of body, again, that point of intuition, let yourself intuit into this. Might notice that there's a very, very deep, deep stillness, silence. No resistance, no need to resist, just something completely natural. Something that you are not creating. It's what is. It's what you is. It's a quality of awareness that simply receives. It receives anything. It's often described as a perfect sphere on a perfectly flat surface. It's poised, equanimity, it's wishless, desireless. And then bring your attention, just let your attention drop down to your gut. So again, that sense of letting it drop down another layer. So here at the level of gut is something a little bit more mysterious and profound, you could say. And if you're beginning to encounter that place of energy that can almost feel a little bit chaotic, it starts to feel like you're letting go of imposing form and continuity onto experience. So just let it be a bit more random. So this is the way things truly are. The possibility of complete nakedness. So we're not looking now for focus, we're actually really looking to let go of any sense of a ground. And every time there's a sense of the mind velcroing back onto something, some thought, some idea about this or what's next, just bring awareness, allow the light of awareness, allow that to be arising in awareness, and notice that awareness is unaffected. Awareness doesn't care what arises inside of it. Resistance, anger, boredom. What is it in your experience right now that is like a mirror? Simply reflect, simply showing what's there. What is there? You could say it's what's in between. What's right there before you hear my voice? See the nature of mind. Look directly into your own mind and see it's empty, it's limitless, it's potential. Notice how the sound of my voice is known without you doing anything. It's known as it arises. The sound of the music in the background, known as it arises. Notice that experience when we look more directly, we look just at what's there, is more vivid. Just what it is, just this, nothing else. No resistance. Just the relief of letting this moment be exactly what it is. in all its perfection, all its imperfection. Notice that awareness sustains itself. It's natural, signifying nothing. Not anything we're creating. Just there. When your mind is completely at rest, when you're not thinking, what is actually there? When you're not thinking about it, is there a person up here talking to you? Is there body? So just coming back as we come from that, just in words, what are some of the words that evoke those experiences? Or phases? Openness. And spaciousness.
Completeness.
Metaphysical.
Immediacy.
What else? What else is kind of experienced in that?
Translucent.
Expansiveness.
Constancy and consistency.
Constancy.
A liberation of mind,
a freedom of mind.
Timeless.
Connection. Anything else not touched on or?
Changeable.
Something nourishing.
Selfless.
Yeah. Releasing, or sense of releasing, yeah.
Resistance as well, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. But within that resistance, is there a distinction when resistance is just resistance, and resistance, one is aware of resistance?
What is awareness?
Well, when you are, when awareness of resistance is present.
Yeah.
And the difference being,
when you're just caught up in it and when you're not aware of that.
So the difference feels like
one you're more in control of and one it becomes less significant and less impactful.
Right. So what's being described is what is being pointed to in the Lakshanas. So part of, for me, starting this way is because it's very easy to talk about something like this, and our natural kind of tendency is to want to, well, to try and understand it, you know, to fit it inside of our kit box of you know, Dharma stuff that we know and we can take away and take a few notes. It doesn't always get us very far, that kind of way of understanding this. Partly what this exercise is pointing to is the immediacy of what the Vimokshas are. They are not something that's far away. They are not something that's kind of somewhere over there, which in that way that we started, you know, the point A, B continuum. The problem with that is it is predicated on the notion that awakening, liberation is somewhere else. It's some place that we have to get, and it's going to require effort, and, well, if we're honest, a lot of what we think it requires is like fixing this. You know, it's like somebody said, you know, you're polishing. What is it Trungpa talks about? You know, you get in your cell, you know, you get your practice together, you get in your cell, and then you start decorating your cell, and then you have to worry. Because you're effectively making into a refuge something that is not a true refuge. I heard something recently that I thought was very apropos this particular subject matter, which is the only true refuge is when we stand in change and in substantiality. When we are able to have that be our refuge, then that is a true refuge. It's a true refuge because it's the one thing that we can say and know absolutely about life and how it lives out. So the Vimokshas are they're the gateways. They're the gateways to liberation. And it's said that there are kind of many gateways. Anything can be a gateway. Anything can take us to this experience. So I just did something very simple. All that was just a pointing to. And it's my belief that what happens when we point to what that reality is that something in us, that in us which is that, resonates. It's a very simple kind of resonance that's happening. It's not rational. It's not something that you're... I mean, how many of you found that when you were doing that, sometimes you were kind of trying to think about what I meant and what you should do with it? How many of you were kind of a lot, some of the time, doing that? So did that get you very far? No. So what got you to kind of some experiencing of and sense of what you know, these the other side, the reality that is?
Got to get beyond the thing.
Right, but how does that, what for you is kind of the key? We're talking about doorways here, so there is a key. And actually, you do have to have the right key. It's possible to have the wrong key. It's possible to lock yourself out on the other side of the door if you're not careful. So what is the key that is likely to open the door?
Just letting be whatever comes. Like, because I was having, like, imagery from what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to let whatever that become.
Yeah.
Not worrying about whether it was right or wrong. I was saying that's what you were meaning me to create.
Yeah, very good. So what she just said is, like, when I was just letting things be whatever they were without trying to change them, have them be something else, right then that was kind of let me in. So that's a key right there. When we let things be, we don't try and fix them, make them into something else. Who else? What else for you was kind of worked to kind of get you through the door?
I didn't know what you were talking about, to be honest, so I just like lay down.
And was that okay? Was that kind of, yeah?
I might be lost me, so I just thought, right,
yeah. Yeah. And that's also fine. It's kind of one of the things that I, you know, truly have confidence in around these teachings, and because that's been my experience. I'll give an example. Many years ago, I lived in California for quite a long time. And I went to a 4-day teaching that the Dalai Lama gave on the Heart Sutra. And I took some notes during this teaching, but I can tell you that the teaching was like, completely went over my head. Most of the time I was like, no idea what he's talking about. Many years later, when I was leaving San Francisco, I was going through all my stuff, and I found my notes. And so I had about a small booklet of kind of notes from this thing, and I read through them and absolutely understood my notes. It was completely clear to me, kind of, oh, now I get it. So I really think sometimes you just got to trust, you know, let things go in and let them just sit in there. And when the time comes, they'll flourish. So, yeah. So what else, anybody's experience of that way through?
I find it really helpful when you mentioned, like, skill point. So the metaphors of being part of the blue sky, things kind of rising. I found if I can just rest in that kind of stillness, things come up. You can see the backdrop, you know, and you can see the blue sky. You don't have to necessarily focus on what's coming up.
Yeah.
There's something about, it's kind of like a still point that sort of remains unchanging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a bigger perspective, or you know, looking for something in experience, maybe that's a bit more subtle, that's not so obvious. One of the things about, you could say, about relative reality or relative seeing is that it's just habitual. It's how we very habitually tend to kind of see and understand things. So what we're trying to do, what you're trying to do in a way is kind of undermine that a little bit, break it, crack it open a wee bit. So sometimes pointing to those things that are a bit more subtle, a bit more around the edges, you could say they're kind of in between experience, they're underneath experience in a way. Is there anything else kind of obviously that...
I felt a bit scared to go there. I suppose there's something
about being able to kind of trust and try and sort of
let go of that fear.
Yeah.
And I felt
quite safe
in what you were,
you know,
I felt like I felt trust in you and what you were saying in the process. So even though it felt a bit scary to go there.
Yeah. So letting go is never be able to let go. Yeah.
Patience.
Yeah. Sitting long enough.
And patience with yourself if you do sometimes get too hooked onto thoughts or resistance of whatever kind, then just still working with it. And
just coming back, yeah. So I'm, I want to say that what you're pointing out is, you know, I had sort of written a talk. I have a hard time writing talks. It's kind of, you know, I have so many things, and then what wants to be said sometimes just has to come in the moment. But certainly all the places that I wanted to focus on, you're already talking about. So the reason I like to do it this way is because what I hope that you will walk away with is an understanding that this is, you know, I think, again, teaching can very easily land in that place that we started off from. It can land inside of your framework of there's a continuum, there's an A, there's a B. I'm trying to get from here to there, and you know take what's being said and think, how's that going to help me get a little bit further along? What I hope is that it also gives you a sense, along with that, that where you're trying to get to, you already are. Or what that reality is already. So I'm going to end a little bit more with on that note, but let me just say then a bit more about the Vimokshas. So there are three, Vimoksha Mukha is what these are. So Mukha is gateway, that's kind of the easy part of this. Vimoksha has two quite distinct translations. So one is liberation. So it's a gate, that's why it's the gateway to liberation, to awakening, you could say. But the moksha also translates as letting go and shedding. So I think Vajradasani found this thing where she said it's linked to the shedding of tears. So I also have this really strong thread, ever since I really got into the Vimokshas, of absolutely there is a key thing in this teaching which is about vulnerability. Some way that what has to be developed and found and understood is a point of receiving something, of letting go a little bit. I'll say a little bit more about that. But in the three Vimokshas, you have... well, this is what takes us. It takes us in any moment. So we're talking about something that happens in a moment. It's that which takes us, breaks us out of, in any moment, the conceiving of a world that causes suffering. It causes suffering because it's impermanent, it's not substantial, it's empty of a fixed self, and for all of those reasons it will eventually cause unsatisfactoriness. So that's what we are looking at on this side. This is kind of what we're encountering. And it's said that if we look more and more and more deeply into those three, any of those three, they tend to kind of come as a package a little bit, but sometimes I think as humans we will be drawn to one in particular. I, for example, was very, very much drawn into the dukkha was the draw for me. Dukkha is unsatisfactoriness, or sometimes translated as suffering. So in my case, I came to Buddhism in my early 20s with a lot of kind of baggage. I'd had, you know, I'd been depressed as a teenager. I was still depressed. So that's what I was working with. I was working with a history of like a world that didn't work for me, that felt like just didn't feel like a good world. You know, I got to a point in my life where I thought, I don't know if I want to keep doing this. So sometimes a doorway will just pull you. You have no choice about it. It is just there. It's like, it's what presents, and we have to go with that. But we can also take these doorways, and there's a way that they can be very useful to kind of take in quite a systematic way. And I have a few thoughts and ideas about where particular practices can be very kind of practically useful in approaching the doorways and then stepping through them. There's a Tibetan saying that says that awakening is, you know, happens by accident. So you can't make it happen, much as you'd probably like to. If we could, we would probably all be awake. Awakening happens by accident. But the second part of that saying is spiritual practice makes us accident prone. So our job is to be accident prone. We have to set ourselves up so that when those moments are there, when that veil is thin, when we stand on the thin edge, that we have that opportunity to break through. I'm going to start with impermanence. So this is simply the fact that when we encounter life, what we encounter is a life that, I think the talk before sort of looked at this quite a lot, nothing is permanent. Part of its beauty and its vividness is that things are constantly coming into being, arising, passing away. I live in Spain, and one of the things that I'm doing in Spain a lot is growing vegetables, growing fruit. And it is quite a sort of amazing process to get from the point where you plant those seeds and you get everything set up and then you watch them go through these cycles until you harvest them and you eat them. There is something really particular about that, going through that whole process. So in impermanence, what we start to see, what we're moving towards, is what's traditionally called the signless. So you might say, well, what is that? I don't find it a very helpful term. Another way of maybe helping to think about the signless is a sign is simply, a good example might be, you start to feel a little feverish and you feel a bit cold. Well, that's a sign that you're getting a bit sick. So we use certain things to indicate something else. So what we're looking for in terms of an experience of walking through the gate is that begins to kind of fall apart a little bit. We start to kind of experience those things without jumping towards the conclusion, as it were. I'm going to read a poem that descriptions of these things rarely do them justice. So sometimes I think poems are far more on the nail. This poem, this is Jane Hirschfield, Late Prayer. Tenderness does not choose its own uses. It goes out to everything equally. Circling rabbit and hawk, look in the iron bucket, a single nail, a single ruby. All the heavens and hells, they rattle in the heart and make one sound. So this is kind of this idea of like, we're very caught up in what do things signify. So I've, you know, in a way, the perfect example here has been the rain and the mud. So if I ask you, what does, you know, right here at Butterfield, what does that signify? What is it just rain and mud? Or is it other things?
It just is.
It is, it just is. But what else is it? For, I mean, truthfully, for us, what else is it?
Suffering.
Suffering, yeah, what else?
Discomfort. Something you can't control.
Something you can't control. But I'm not, huh?
Shit.
Yeah? I won't repeat that on camera. You get the gist. Huh? Work, did somebody say?
Words.
Worms. Oh, okay. I was about to say, for me it signifies, am I going to be able to get my car out when we need to leave? So that's kind of what a signless universe looks like. It looks like a universe in which we as human beings take all those things which are in and of themselves, in, you know, meaningless, and we make meaning out of them. So the signless samadhi, when we're talking about this experience of being on the other side, of being in this reality, it's not another place, it's not another place in time, it's now. It's simply a different seeing and a different experiencing of what's happening right now. So that different experience would be simply what you said, it would just be, it's just this. Can the mud be any less muddy than it is? Or can it, in this moment, can the mud be any less muddy than it is?
It wouldn't be mud.
Yeah. It's just what it is. Is there a sense that reality cares? Do you think reality cares about the mud? Or the rain? Or the fact that it might take you a while to leave because the tractor's got to pull you out?
Well, does it not care?
Well, reality as in a bigger sense
doesn't care.
Yeah, it neither cares or doesn't care. Yeah. So we've got this kind of, if we can see that the way, so this is the teaching in a way, if we can look more and more deeply at, towards that way that we kind of, it's like joining the dots. Somebody said that to me. It's like we're constantly joining the dots. Something happens. When I meditate, I notice this a lot. You know, I'll be sitting on the cushions and then something happens, you know, something pops into my mind, and then all of a sudden there's a whole set of associations. So that's like the joining of the dots. That's the signless, things signifying something else. The signless is when that ceases to happen. Things can arise and pass away without having that, it becomes something else. And this, and also if we can understand, if we can see how that leads to suffering. So a good example of how that might manifest in an experience, somebody in a workshop I did yesterday was talking about a few years ago being here, and they were camped near the toilets. And one morning they were there, and they'd come along to empty the toilets. And so there was this, they could hear the machines, and there was the smell of the poo coming out of the toilets. And, you know, he said, he just had this very clear sense of, it's just sensation. So as soon as we assign that sense, that's poo, it becomes something else, doesn't it? And that's where, once we're in a signless kind of, you know, space, there isn't that same kind of, well, that's... As soon as we start assigning to anything distinction, guess what we're doing? We're rejecting some things, we're accepting some things. So in that signless space, there's a way of just vividly experiencing things. It's a more intimate engagement with what's there. So you can experiment a bit with this. You can experiment with, you know, as you go out into the world, notice where things start to kind of manifest more strongly in experience, where a particular distinction just starts to come at you. There's a great saying, which I'm never good at remembering them exactly, that says something like, suffering, whatever in your life appears as suffering, reality, that's a sign. Reality is drawn to suffering like a magnet. So reality is looking for that which is unresolved in you, that which is resisted in you. So if reality is moving towards something, keeps wanting you to see something, that's a sign that it's looking to, you know, it wants to purify that. You want to resist it. It wants to purify. So the next place we can look is in the area of not self. So actually, one thing I would say about impermanence is, in order to kind of that, you know, how do you become accident prone in respect to impermanence? Well, you could say that how you become accident prone in relation to impermanence is mostly through the practice of meditation. Meditation's where you get some real edge on that, because in meditation practice, you can start to take your experience and look at it in more and more and more detail. You can start to really focus on, do I see any continuity in what's experienced? A little bit harder. This is kind of harder to do it in day-to-day life, but you can sort of reflecting your experience of things. Like as you're eating your food, you can have a sense of where did that food come from? Somebody planted vegetables, somebody grew it, somebody harvested it, brought it to me. So then we have this experience of not-self. So in the not-self, so this is where we start to question, we start to look at experience in terms of, is this really me or mine? So people started to talk this morning at the end of the exercise, there was that sense of beginning to have did you sort of have a feel for like, that sense of you being at the center of the universe just starts to loosen a bit? Because actually that's a habit. The habit we have is we habitually experience things as though I'm over here experiencing you. And that's just habit. So sometimes we need something to kind of push us outside of that. And in the not-self, not-self is traditionally where it transforms into space. It transforms into this sense of we're bigger than we think. We are not limited to this skin and this body. There's something that... we inhabit a much bigger space. In fact, we inhabit a space of consciousness. And that consciousness is no different than the space of consciousness that you inhabit or you inhabit. We are one and the same stuff. That consciousness is expressing itself and manifesting itself uniquely and differently in each of us. But it's not a separate and different consciousness. So again, we can begin to sort of explore that through, I mean, metta's a great practice for this. You know, when you do the metta bhavana practice and you begin to kind of reach out to kind of connect with other beings, that's a very good way that we sort of are bringing that notion in. Also remembering that as we look at shunyata, this is typically described as shunyata, emptiness, I much prefer the translation of shunyata as fullness. Because what we're looking for is a more inclusive experience of what's happening. So instead of like that, what we're trying to do is exclude certain experiences. And that's a lot of what, if you think about how we go through life, we tend to go through life much more with a focused attention on what I'm doing, what I want to be happening. And that excludes a lot. So you can just start to, again, right now, for example, I'm sitting here, I have quite a lot of energy and attention on this talk I'm giving. So what happens when I just stop for a moment and just put my attention on you, listening to the talk? Something just is subtle, but something shifts.
From inside yourself to outside yourself.
Yeah, so there's, you know, there's an expansion of a sense of awareness. I can start to be aware that in this moment there isn't, I mean, it's quite interesting, it's like, it's very subtle really, but we do tend to have this idea of like, in what we're experiencing, it's very much focused on what's happening from here. So just sometimes, again, that's something you can do. Just, you might walk out there, and a very good time to do this is when you have those little moments where you just suddenly get like, it's too much. I had a little bit of that this morning when the fourth article of clothing that I'd put on ended up with mud on it somehow. And it was just this kind of like, no, don't get mud. And, you know, just, it's all about you as a contraction. There's a sense, now as soon as there's that contraction, what you can notice is that sense of spaciousness, of awareness, of relaxing, of presence, of just this, no problems, goes instantly. Because what there is in that moment is there's a resistance to something that is. So that brings us on to where we meet the aspect of the teaching that gets into unsatisfactoriness or dukkha. So unsatisfactoriness happens because we're resisting something. How many of you this weekend had moments, maybe many moments, where you resisted the mud and the rain and the... How many of you saw at some point it just like... And what was that experience when you, as soon as you resist it, what's there? Dukkha? Worry, annoyance, stress, so there's that sense again, it's like a contracting, isn't there? There's like a feeling of like, it's a contracted feeling, isn't it? It's not inclusive. It shuts out experiencing. How many of you had an experience as well of sometimes just being able to let go into it completely? Like, it's just mud and rain, nothing more. So conversely, what's that experience like?
More fun,
it's freer.
Light.
Energetic.
Safe.
Contented.
Funny.
So do you get that teaching? Do you get that that's all the teaching you need just in that little moment of interaction?
Surrender.
And what does surrender, the word I like for it, this brings me back to kind of the Vimokshas as vulnerability, as shedding. So like shedding, when I think of shedding tears, whenever I'm shedding tears, I'm never in control. Because if I was in control, I wouldn't be shedding tears. You know, when I'm shedding tears, it's because something has got hold of me and it's just kind of taken me over. It's like, it's taking me. So there is something, what's kind of just being pointed to in your experience, not in what I'm saying, in your experience is, as soon as there's that letting go into the way things actually are, with no resistance, no attempt to change it, fix it, make it something else, what happens?
We win,
yeah, but all the things that were said, there's that openness, freedom, creativity. That was the interesting thing. It leads to creativity. So I had a very interesting workshop yesterday. I did a workshop on meditation, and the question that was very predominant in that workshop was, this kind of, it's like an eternal koan, you know, if I'm going to meditate, I don't want to let go of all my kind of desire and you know, for this life. I think this life's fantastic. It's great. What's not to love? It's like, it's intense, it's passionate, it's alive. And meditation just is like, they want you to go off and go forth from all of that and become kind of boring and dull and, you know, equanimous. And I think it's interesting that in what you're saying, that's not, those not the words that are being used. The words that are being used are creative, more space, more energy. So that's kind of the sort of, you know, the coming, the point at which, in a way, we want to get with these teachings is when we stop resisting, all there is potentiality. Reality is, you know, those gateways are there all the time. So you, in any moment, and actually the Dukkha gateway, I think that's the one that we encounter the most often. It's always there. Is there ever a day goes by without there's something that you wish would be some other way? Something that gets in the way of like some idea or plan that you had of how it was going to be. Sometimes something that's intense. I mean, you know, I'm thinking about here we are, this like environment. This is life, you know, stuff happens. Stuff is unpredictable, it can't be counted on. It's all about tension. You know, I have this phrase that somebody said, and it just sort of encapsulates somehow for me all of this. It's like, how do we engage, this could be a good question to go away with, how do we engage more and more fully with life and love and at the same time be completely prepared to let go in every moment? So that's the koan, that's the sort of endless tension that's there. And one of the things I want to say is where we have tension, so the tension that we have between, you could say, the unenlightened and the enlightened, often what we want to do in those tensions is we want to resolve them at their own level. So we're looking to get from point unenlightened to point Buddha, and we think that the resolution to that tension is here, don't we? If only I could be this, if only I could polish myself up a bit and do enough practices and then I'll arrive here. What if the answer, what if the doorway to liberation wasn't in something between those two polarities? So what if the answer to kind of, you know, skillful versus unskillful, good versus bad, happiness versus sorrow, what if it couldn't be resolved at its own level? What if the way to resolve it was to hold yourself in the paradox? To hold yourself in a way that is just tender and vulnerable and right now and right here, and let that experience really in. Instead of endlessly fixing, endlessly adjusting, endlessly trying to have it be just so, just the way it's going to be, endlessly planning the next retreat that is really going to get us enlightened or on the way. So a couple of things, this is a quote which I can't resist, from Trungpa, who's one of my sort of favourite teachers around this. I think he sort of really kind of hit the nail on the head. The more confusion, the more unity. You see, chaos has an order by virtue of which it isn't really chaos. But when there's no chaos, no confusion, there's luxury, comfort. Comfort and luxury lead you more into samsara because you're in a position to create more kinds of luxurious possibilities, psychologically, philosophically, physically. But strangely enough, looking at it scientifically, at the chemistry of it, relating more luxurious situations adds further to your collection of chaos. That is, finally, all these luxurious conclusions come back on you, and you begin to question them. So you're not happy after all. Which leads you to the further understanding that, after all, this discomfort has an order to it. So he's talking in this about, you know, the way that, another way, he says, you stretch your legs and invent more gadgets to entertain yourself with. But strangely enough, what happens is those gadgets create more issues, more problems, more chaos. So that's kind of how we live our lives. You know, we're constantly wanting to take these tensions and fix them at their own level. So you can look for yourself, don't take my word for it. Take, you know, walk away from this and look deeply into some of your own particular koans, some of your own particular tensions that are in your life at this moment. And rather than trying to fix it, rather than trying to resolve it at its own level, see if you can look for the tension that exists between them and then see that the gateway to liberation is in that tension. And I'll just read that quote for you again because I think it sort of encapsulates what I mean by that. How do we engage more and more fully with life and love at the same time as be prepared to let go? So that's kind of an example of how we live inside of attention. Yeah, and I think the final point for me, this is, there's a few things. This is something that I was talking to somebody not that long ago who had been in an experience with her daughter who's really suffering, a lot of pain. She'd been in hospital with her daughter, and she was in this room with her daughter who's in the midst of something really intense. So she's having to kind of be with her daughter, quite young daughter, suffering. And she had this moment, this experience of really understanding, I can't control this. I can't make it any different. And she said that as soon as that knowing emerged, what came immediately was an absolute sense of relief, complete and utter relief. So that's another one of those koans. It's like that's an exact description of like a woman, a mother, holding in front of her that tension. Because what does a mother want? All she wanted was for her daughter to be better and well and not suffering. Somehow it was in the holding of that, really, really being present with and holding to that awareness of her daughter's suffering. And what came out of that was this deeper sense of letting go. So all of those things are pointing to what this teaching is pointing to, that what you have to do is to let yourself be more and more engaged and intimate. Look for the Dharma doors. The Dharma doors will pull you. They will, you know, they're not often doors that we choose. For me, it was dukkha for a long time. It just was. It seems to be now that it's more about impermanence. So trust what those doors are, and rather than shy away from them, in the words of Trungpa, be fearless. Don't be afraid of the sort of chaos that life is. Life is never going to stop being chaos, but being chaotic. And vulnerability, you know, there's a great thing in this, which is you're either going to awaken through, you know, one path is just the path of faith. You just, on the path, you practice intently enough and hard enough, that's the sort of accident prone. But there's another path, and that is the path of vulnerability. And you read about it and you hear about it all the time. People that are just up against it, they're in that mother. They're right, you know, their noses are in it, and there's nothing they can do but open and be vulnerable. So somehow you've got to find that resting place, that koan between the spiritual practices, the effort that you make, and what is this point of vulnerability, what is this point of letting go, how do you connect? What are the connections between your experiences in life? Often, and dukkha will be the most obvious. It's in our face. I think, you know, you can certainly experience kind of the emptiness of self when you're in community and right livelihood. That's a very good opportunity for that. Meditation is a very good opportunity to experience impermanence. Out there in your lives, endless, endless unsatisfactoriness. So if you just kind of take all those moments as Dharma doorways, notice when you're sort of like recoiling from it, notice when you're resisting it, and just let go a little bit. Let go into it a little bit, and then see, like my friend, what can emerge is something quite miraculous. It's never what we expect.